Welcome to Thug Metrics. This is Brian Wimpen, your host, and we want to get to our guest as quickly as possible because he's going to share some things that just might change your life today. No pressure. So welcome, Damon Cortese, to Thug Metrics.
Hi, great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Everybody that's listening, we'll have Damon do a little deeper dive into kind of what he's got going on. But he's one of the co-founders of Simply Measured, one of my favorites and possibly the best social media analytics tool on the freaking planet. So I feel great that we're able to get a few minutes with you and. Tell us, let's kind of jumping into it, tell us a little bit about what was the path that got you and what was the, you know, what was the cocktail napkin or the genesis for Simply Measured getting started? Because I'm sure where it started, the idea stage to where it is today is maybe so different than you ever thought it would be that, sometimes you pause and go, wow. It's hard to believe we've went that far. So share some thoughts on that real quick.
Yeah, certainly. And then I'll share a couple phases. One, the point you say, wow, I didn't even realize we would get here. We actually first started as a company. Our name was Untitled Startup Incorporated. That was our legal entity. We didn't know exactly what we were doing. Like most startups 5 years ago, we didn't have a product or a business plan. We knew we wanted to do something in social, and we eventually got around back to social analytics, which is kind of where I started to get, I got into that maybe around 2007 or so. So that's when Twitter was starting to become, pretty popular among the nerds and the geeks out there. And I was actually traveling abroad, and I was about to hit my 2000th tweet, which doesn't sound like a lot today. I have about 50,000 plus today, but I was really curious who the heck I was talking to and why I was tweeting so much. Why was I using this platform with a bird and a fail whale so much? And so I think it literally was a cocktail napkin. like I said, I was traveling abroad, so I would go out to eat a lot. And I sat down and I started drawing some charts of what might be useful metrics to try to analyze myself. And I went back to my hotel and I sat down and like you did in the old days, I wrote a little Perl script that actually scraped my tweets from Twitter.com, downloaded them into a CSV file, and spit out some interesting analytics about who I was talking to, who I was retweeting, what times of the day I was talking, all this kind of stuff that's still pretty core to, what we do today as a social analytics platform. And I built that little Perl script. People downloaded it and seemed to love it. And so then I took a weekend, learned Ruby on Rails, and built the first, Twitter analytics platform called TweetStats. And then I released that in January of 2008, and it's kind of been a roller coaster since then.
Well, anytime you can pull out and share about writing a Perl script, that is Smithsonian. Anymore, oddly, especially with Ruby has really changed. That really was one of those things that just changed the horizon so dramatically. My experience, because it opened up so much. Because you had Cold Fusion. You had some other frameworks that were out there that all just sort of started to make it non-enterprise so much quicker.
Great
story, by the way. That's the way I hope that things happen, but that's not always the case, right? So you guys didn't go generate a $1 billion round. You weren't like a quiet stealth unicorn like now that's a little passé, but still cool. So that's not how you guys did it. You literally just started rocking with something that was a pain point and built from there. What was one of the early, thinking back, let's kind of think back, what's one of the surprises from that point of you just wanted to see who what the true analytics were of those the social conversations. What's a surprise looking back that maybe you got validation or maybe it was a discovery, if you can come up with one?
I mean, I'm going to take a little bit of a engineer-centric approach on this, and simply one of the surprises to me was that people actually wanted this data. that was something for me that kind of blew my mind. And as we were in the early days of developing products for the Simply Measured platform, we kept putting out these different products to kind of test the waters. And the first one gathered tweets and put them into a Google spreadsheet. And it's a super, super simple concept, but people started signing up and people started giving us money. And that was actually a huge surprise for little old me, who was just an engineer trying to make something useful that people might want to pick up and use. And I was just so surprised that they would want to buy that solution. That was just kind of mind-bending for me. And that's part of the reason that a few months into the company, we brought on a third co-founder to help us actually build the business, because we were a couple product guys just out there having fun building products, and we realized that we could actually make a little bit of money off this, and then we realized we could actually make a pretty big company off of this. And it's still very true today. I mean, companies are spending millions and millions of dollars on advertising, and they're still trying to figure out exactly what the benefit of all of that is. And all of the social platforms are really just developing their ad platforms in addition to, their native publishing platform. And it's a really, really interesting point in time, just because they're growing up, they're public companies now, and they really have to justify who they are and where all that spend goes. So that was one of the things that was just super interesting to me, is just that, hey, here's a little data stream. I scraped some tweets off of the Twitter.com website, and oh, wow, it's actually useful. It's actually, valid insights into what's going on the platform. And that was always a lot of fun for me to try to dig in and find those insights as well.
Well, that's fantastic. And it's so cool to hear some of those early, the pick, the shovel, the map to the gold. What is the gold? Is it fool's gold? All those good things. So what's when you wake up in the morning, or you wake up in a cold sweat at night, and you think, God, what's the definition of big data? Because I'm sure that happens all the time, right?
all the time.
what's your definition when you hear the term big data?
So I take a very practical approach to it, and I see it as two components. One, it's the ingest and processing of a large number of data points. And then two, it's the processing of such data at scale. And by that, I mean basically anything that you can't fit into an Excel spreadsheet. that's really, how I think about it. And even that's changing with all the technologies that Microsoft is coming out with for Excel, like Power BI and that type of thing. But that's kind of the basic definition to me. Anything you can't really sit there on your laptop and figure out how to process.
Excellent. So, I mean, how do you, especially because your organization, and you've been very focused on consumption and what people do with that information once it's been consumed, how do you, two parts of the question, how do you use data on a daily basis in your life, maybe professionally, personally, and two, how do your clients use data?
So let's start with the how do I use data, and that's always a fun one. I've always been interested in data gathering and visualization. This is one of those things that I would do for fun. Like I said, I built TweetStats back in the day because I was kind of bored in a foreign country, and I sat down on a Friday night and scraped some data from Twitter.com. So these days I'm always kind of keeping an eye out for new networks and things like that. When Meerkat came out, I kind of looked at the API and figured out how to get data out of the API. Strangely, one of my favorite things is to send people spreadsheets of data that they didn't realize they could get. So I love
nice.
that's one of my favorite things to do with our own marketing department is just send them a quick little email. Oh, hey, I found out I could get the number of views of every single Meerkat video of the past day. Here you go. And just kind of let them have fun with it. There's a number of other random things that I do too. For example, I'm very interested in how data can make our lives better. So, you know, I drive the same route to work every single day, and I know that there are certain times that I can leave or can't leave that may be better for me. And so one of the things I did is I stood up an Amazon EC2 instance and set it up to get Bing traffic data every 5 minutes and try to figure out, you know, what the most optimal route was for me to take into work at any given point in the day. So these are some of the things that I do for fun when I'm bored and have some spare time on the weekends, which I think kind of says a little bit to my own personality and social network. But
that's awesome.
A little bit of a dork in that sense. And then, you know, moving on to how we at Simply Measured use data, I mean, a lot of what we do obviously is very data-driven. So, like I said, one of the big parts of big data is simply the ingest and the processing of all of those data points. And that's probably where we spend most of our time. A lot of our customers do have significant data sets, but a lot of them, if they're looking at their own channel or their own profile, it's really in the, you know, tens of thousands of data points, not necessarily in the millions or billions, and that's fairly easy to deal with. But for us, getting all of that data is a huge challenge. So I think we have about 40 terabytes of data in our database cluster, which isn't a huge amount by any stretch of the imagination. But in order to get that in, we hit a number of different APIs throughout the day. So a simple example is the Facebook and Instagram API. I think we hit those their systems at least 4 to 8 million times a day, so we can try to pull in as much data as we possibly can.
Wow. Oh my gosh. That kind of blows my mind a little bit. That is a, you know, you're thinking a few thousand, I mean, you know what I mean? That's 4 to 8 million times a day, which, I mean, makes sense. I mean, it's almost like a heartbeat, right? You're hitting that heartbeat. Like every time it happens, you're trying to hit that because there's new data,
exactly.
That's coming. You know, that transaction is happening, and it never stops. Hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that I pride myself on and our company on is that we are very aggressive about making sure we have the most data possible for our customers, and that's one thing I love. You know, we're a little bit over aggressive in terms of hitting those APIs probably, but in the long run, it's more beneficial for our customers, and they get the best picture possible of what's out there. So I love that we're so aggressive about making sure we have as much of that as possible.
And the beauty with storage, you know, the price of storage is, you know, has dropped so significantly. You can curate, I mean, you can curate a mountain full of, you know, of data and then come back to it when you need it. And so
that's
awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's one of the ways that things are going, right? It's so cheap now, even different from 5 years ago to just store that data. You know, you pull it in, you let it sit there, and then there's all these systems that are making it really, really easy to actually query that data at scale.
So and we're going to come back, of course, to the what the future of data and looking at conversations can help a little bit later here. So what's been the biggest, like, I guess, realization as you help your clients? Because ultimately, you guys use it internally, of course, to build your business, but you have, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of clients using it to help drive their, you know, understand and drive the conversation around, you know, and enhance the conversation around their brand. Anything that stands out that possibly shocked you, you know, once you, you know, that clients have came back to you and shared?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. Trying to think about it off the top of my head, I think one of the things that does shock me, I think, is that there's so many different metrics that you could actually measure from all of these different social channels. And when you look at our different reports. I think we have between 30 or 40 different stock reports. That's not counting all the customization we do for customers. When you look at that, you know, you have this giant chart or this giant report, and we're trying to tell a story throughout this entire report. And there's so many different ways to slice and dice the data. And, you know, what's still happening in the marketplace right now, there's not really a standard way to look at all of that data. And so from that perspective, you know, we try to define some standard metrics in terms of engagement and things like that. And it's really difficult to actually do. And we have all these disparate systems. So say somebody's looking at a Facebook report on our system, they have numbers on our system where we collected the data and crunched some numbers, and then they look at Facebook and, you know, there's some different numbers on Facebook, and then they look at Facebook Insights and there's some different numbers there. So trying to correlate and collect all these different numbers across all these different systems and make sure that they all match up is also ridiculously challenging. That's always one of the things that surprises me, is just how much there is to measure, and trying to figure out what little thing or what little action you took that actually impacted your engagement or impacted your audience or things like that. And, you know, you can track that pretty easily, but it's just amazing, you know, being able to kind of do that A-B testing and looking at it and say, okay, you know, we put out this campaign, we use this type of post content, whether it's a video or a picture, and it had this impact on our engagement and our audience. And it's really, really interesting being able to tie those dots together. And of course, you know, we want to keep going further down that line and say, okay, had this impact on engagement, grew our audience by this much, and it resulted in X number of dollars of sales. And that's something we're very close to having that social ROI piece in there. Some places can do it, but it's kind of a method of, you know, a certain place that companies have to be in to have all that data in the right place. And that's another thing that surprises me as well, is, you know, simply being able to have all of these systems in place to be able to query them such that you can get a complete picture in one place of everything that's going on. We're not quite there yet. There's still a lot of work.
I start thinking about, like you were talking about, the classic ROI. I mean, that's ultimately the holy grail, is being able to point, especially from a marketing standpoint, advertising, marketing, you know, running campaigns, you know, is that really translating all the way down to profitability? Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that literally is the holy grail that people have been chasing for forever. And then you throw social on top of it, you know, where you're able to then put some metrics, because it's using applications to have conversations. You know, it's not literally standing with a clipboard outside of a mall entrance trying to ask people, you know, what's going on. You know, so yeah. I think it's cool. It's cool you guys are almost there. That's encouraging.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing too, and also one of the surprising things, is if you look at a lot of businesses, how many of them are actually run off of Excel spreadsheets? It's a little bit crazy when you start to look at it. And we've done some prototyping work with a few different companies where they'll come in and they'll send us an Excel spreadsheet, and it'll have tabs for all of their social data, and then it'll have that last tab that is, you know, spend based on conversions from social. And they're tracking all of this manually, and to some respects, that's a little bit terrifying. I can only imagine, you know, what that person's job is like who has to maintain that.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's quick Excel story. And you guys, you know, very much could be, you're the 21st generation Excel. I hate to put that tab on you, but I mean, it's ultimately, when you start becoming such a tool, that's the way it should be, like an Excel, because it just is there and you use it, and you know you can use it for simple to more complex things. Maybe that's the future. But they call them the Excel babies. The beta group is somebody that I know in Seattle who was part of that group in developing Excel, and I worked with him as an analyst. Absolutely knew more about Excel, like all the backdoor stuff, would absolutely blew my mind. Like a top, like 0.01% power user. So it was pretty cool. Anyway, that's my Excel story. I had to share it.
Oh, yeah. We're huge fans. I think we have about a third of our conference rooms named after Excel function. So.
that is awesome. So what's the future of functionality within big data?
The future of functionality. So I think one way to look at it is the, you know, like I said earlier, big data is about two parts. One is just kind of getting all of that little data into one place to make it big, and then the other part of it is processing on top of that data at scale. That second part is becoming really commoditized, especially in terms of the functionality that we have to do calculations over big data. You know, 5 years ago, if you wanted to do this big data thing, you had to stand up an HBase cluster or HDFS and learn how to map reduce. And, you know, the tools for that were very limited. And, you know, you had to be an engineer to be able to do that, basically. But now we've got all this great new technology that's really been maturing in the past 5 years. You look at Google BigQuery, Amazon Redshift, even, you know, vendor products you can download and still install yourself, like Elasticsearch. All of a sudden, you can make queries over millions and billions of rows of a data set in a matter of seconds. It's really, really scary how well it works. And you don't really need a ton of engineering expertise. If you want to use Redshift or BigQuery, it's literally just SQL queries. And you can do a, you know, select count star or select sum star. And it becomes really, really accessible if you want to try to do any sort of calculation. I like to think that a lot of the advanced analytics out there, it's really just counting, right? You know, you're counting things up, you're dividing them by other things, you're not really doing anything too complicated. There are, of course, some systems where you're actually doing analysis and trying to identify correlations between data sets and things like that. But a lot of analytics out there is literally just counting things. And it's become much easier to count them at scale now. So that's one of the things that I think has become a lot easier, especially in the past several years. It's just so much more approachable to actually, you know, be able to do queries over that size of data.
So what's the future of data science?
Data science.
It's a big thing now. I mean, you can't find enough of them. It used to be accountants because nobody wanted to deal with that. They kind of, you know, closed the gap a little bit. Now data science, I mean, you know, a lot of us have taken accounting classes, several, you know, lots of them, and that's more of a possibility. But being a data scientist, that is a whole different ball game. That doesn't happen quick.
No, it doesn't. Again, you know, I think we make it a little more complex than it needs to be, but at the end of the day, a lot of data science is trying to dig into the data and trying to tell a story through the use of data and calculations. And I mean, that's a lot of what it is. You know, if you look at some of the data scientist blogs out there that I've taken a look at, a lot of what they're doing is saying, okay, we've got this massive data set. What's interesting about it? And that's where I started too. I find it really humorous when I built TweetStats back in 2008. People started throwing, you know, the term data scientist around and analytics around, and I would actually go back to them and be like, it's not really anything too complicated. I'm literally just storing data in a database and writing SQL queries. But I think exposing that information, you know, it's in a scientific way. And if you look at, you know, just the roots of the words data scientist, it's somebody that has a hypothesis about data and is trying to prove it. And, you know, once you prove it, you can tell a story about that data. And, you know, that's, I think the thing about it to repeat is that it's just becoming easier and easier to get in there and actually try to find those insights. I think it was really limited. You know, when I started doing it, like I said, I was writing these Perl scripts. I was downloading all this data into CSVs and, you know, I remember working with GNIP way back in the early days, and, you know, GNIP was a data provider and they had a ton of data, and I was able to partner with them to help do insights into the data. And I guess I could consider myself a data scientist, but really I was just a a hacker who was able to, you know, grep through some files and count things in a unique way. So I have a little bit of trouble kind of seeing the future of that. I mean, it's definitely a huge field, but the tools are just becoming so much more approachable that it's becoming really interesting what's coming out of it.
Let's put the big futurism hat on now. We'll get into the big questions. So 5 years from now, how is this data conversation going to change around like social, you know, like social analytics?
So social analytics specifically, one of the interesting things that we're seeing as a trend is just the, again, the commoditization of analytics for each social platform. Facebook, actually, this was six days ago, they shut down their search API, so you can no longer search for public status posts from the Facebook network. Granted, they kind of replaced that with a platform from DataSift, where you can actually get insights on a number of different private posts. But again, for privacy reasons, they're not exposing any of that data. They're just exposing the analytics on top of that data. And that's something we're seeing more and more often with these mature social networks, where they're doing a large number of the analytics themselves and not so much providing the data that they used to, which is, it's an interesting trend. You know, Facebook has their insights platform. Twitter recently, you know, updated their analytics platform, and we're seeing this a lot, where the social networks are trying to control the data and the message around it more so than they used to. Twitter is still unique in that you can, you know, get nearly every single tweet that comes out of their platform, but that's also changing a little bit. It's a little bit more difficult to work with that. There are a few more restrictions than there used to be around pulling that data in and doing interesting things with it. So from a social analytics perspective, that's one of the interesting things I see. It's just that trend of, you know, platforms trying to control their own data and their own analytics. And to be honest, I'm really happy about that, because then it gives you an authoritative source for a number of the different metrics. And the challenge at the end of the day is still data acquisition across all of those different platforms. That's one of the things that we are really good about, is actually going out to all of these different platforms and gathering this disparate data and bringing it together in a way that actually makes sense for our customers and allows them to gain some useful insights on that data. Extending that to the quote-unquote big data industry at large, I think the challenge is still data acquisition. There's just so many disparate data sources, and we're creating so much more data. There's still not an easy way to bring that all into one place. I mean, think about a smart home, right? You've got all of these sensors around, you've got all of this information, but if you actually want to get access to that right now, if you want to put it somewhere where you can query it, it's not easy. And you know, if you want to have some more personalization, like I said earlier, I drive to work the same route every single day, and I still have to stand up an EC2 instance to try to figure out the best, you know, data-driven way to work. But I'm kind of a unique individual in that aspect. But I think that, you know, that's the thing, is that acquisition is still really, really difficult, and the personalization of that data and big data is going to become more and more important as those things center around us. But of course, as we move into that realm, we have to worry about privacy and all of those fun aspects of it. So it's going to be an interesting world.
Absolutely. So last question, we got about 30 seconds left. So what's one thing that like your smaller businesses could do, you know, right now to start helping themselves on looking at their social conversations?
So for the smaller businesses that want to try to, you know, help further themselves, it's really just get out there and engage with your customers. One of my favorite small businesses is a local brewery in Ballard, and they've got a great social presence. And, you know, they're engaging with their customers. They're getting out there. They're helping draw people into their business just by being loud and, you know, getting some influencers and helping spread the word about their business. And as a small business, you don't really need to measure too much to start off with. You just need to get out there and engage with folks.
Well, that's perfect. Damon, thank you so